Because there is recounting of what we've already spent time studying, that's why we're going to look at Genesis chapter 24, 32 through 67, since we've already had some time to look at the other sections. Let's start with just looking at some of the who's that are in the section verses 32 to 36. I'll read it. Then the men came to the house, and he unloaded the camels. Then the man came to the house, and he unloaded the camels, and provided straw and feed for the camels, and water to wash his feet, and the feet of the men who were with him. Food was set before him to eat, but he said, I will not eat until I have told you about my errand. And he said, speak on. So he said, I am Abraham's servant. The Lord has blessed my master greatly, and he's become great, and he has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male and female servants, and camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old, and to him he has given all that he has. I've already highlighted the who's for you. That might make it easier. But in verse 33, it's one of those examples where you have to pay attention. Food was set before him to eat, and he said, I will not eat until I've told you about my errand. And he said, speak on. Can you see that he says are two different people? That's a good example again. It's the exact same phrase, but context has to tell us who's the he. And so that's where the first one is. Food was set before him. There's the guest. So we started with the man, the servant, who came to the house. And food was set before him. He says, I will not eat. And then he said would be, Laban. I kept wanting to say Betula, but it wasn't. But Laban, who was going to say, go ahead, speak. Also, while we're looking here, do you notice in verse 32, the men who were with him, who's that?
The servants that also came.
So the servants that were part of the caravan, I think we said last time, you know, if you're going to bring 10 camels, you're going to bring protecting servants, serving servants, you know, this is a large group. It's just like the story of the wise men who came. We often say three. That must have been a large group. If you came that distance, your men of nobility with treasures, they must have been quite an appearance. In the same way, when he showed up, you know, they were used to seeing caravans, but he came with the men with him, and they too were welcomed. So when she said, you're welcome to come home, we'll put you up. That would be like maybe you meet someone at McDonald's and he says, hey, I'm looking for a place to spend the night. Come out over to my house. And then as you say, you know, you're calling up, as Dennis is calling up Joyce and said, Joyce, pick up the kitchen. I've got a guest coming. He looks out and notices that his guest is getting into a bus and he's got a football team with him. Joyce, clean out the garage. The servants, the camels, it was quite a... which tells you something of their ability to invite that many in. While we're there, anything else strike you as you're looking at it?
Well, the servant, again, kind of gives glory to the Lord and says, he's blessed my master greatly, and he has become great. But he brings the attention to the Lord.
Yes, he's very, very much about the Lord here, isn't he? The Lord has done this. The Lord has done this. He mentions Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. Why does he say that? Whoops.
Because it was a miracle.
It was unusual. Well, actually, it might have two things. I think, firstly, I think one of the key themes in the whole narrative is God's doing this. The Lord is doing this. The Lord is doing this. And so just the very fact that my prospective spouse I'm offering to your sister is this guy's an answer, a miracle. But he might also be saying she was old when she gave birth. That's why her son... Abraham's son is still within range of age to marry his Abraham's brother's granddaughter. In other words, he's, well, she was real old when she had her child. You know, sometimes I'll meet, I've met people that are literally great grandparents that are my age. And my first thought is, you probably started your family a little earlier than me did. You know, wow. And so in the same way, he's trying to say, yes, son and granddaughter, and I don't know the age difference between Nahor and Abraham, but that also explains it. Okay. Well, let's look at this next section. I'm going to kind of, it's a lot of it is a repeat of he's recounting what we've already read. So he comes in, he says, let me tell you a story. Let me give you a narrative resume of the situation. So I'm going to, you can follow it up there. I'll let it, let you read it, as, if you can keep up with it. Are you keeping up? Are you keeping up? Actually, that's kind of fast, I guess. So why does he tell all that information? We, of course, knew it, but why does he tell them? What's he trying to accomplish with that? These are some, by the way, these are more observational. First of all, this is interpretive. Observation says, oh, notice, there's a lot of parallel. If you're really careful, you'll notice there's some little differences. It's not, you know, if you're telling the story to different people, you'll throw in and emphasize different details. But why is this whole, why is he telling them, and what are we supposed to get from it?
Well, one thing, she's jewelry on her that she didn't have when she left, and that might raise some questions.
Okay, so, yeah, why are you doing this? Yes.
This might also be a time when this is natural. You know, the spoken word was how they kept account of things that happened from generation to generation even. So a telling of the story is just about the same way we read about what's happening in events and things like that. That could be it.
Very good point. In that culture, in a lot of ancient cultures, it was all oral and very narrative. And frankly, people like a good story. And so as he is recounting that, he's helping them to see the picture, and that's natural.
Dinner conversation, you have to have something to talk
about. Yeah. and honestly, you know, if a fella, you're walking down the street, a guy walks up to you and says, I'd like to marry your daughter, you probably wouldn't give him the time of day if he's just walking by. But you know, you've invited this person in. He is trying to explain, I'm ready to take your daughter to another country, far away. You'll probably never see her again. Let me spend some time explaining that. So that makes good sense that it's narrative. Just by way of contrast, over in chapter 24, verse 66, when the servant meets Isaac. Okay, so what do you think Isaac is going through during this time? You know, again, he can't text him and say, guess what? You know, he can't FaceTime and say, here she is. What's he going through? And so when he comes back, we're told in verse 26 or 66, the servant told Isaac all the things he had done. Notice he doesn't go, we're not told, that, you know, it was probably a similarly long narrative, but we don't need to get all that. But here it is, and I just feel like, again, emphasizing God is doing it. God is doing it. God is doing it. And so the story is he had to give the whole story to convince them. He had to give the whole story as well to put the focus on the Lord. Now here's verses 49 to 52. I'll read it, and we'll notice some of the who's here. Now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, again, the servant speaking, tell me. And if not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing comes from the Lord. We cannot speak to you either bad or good. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go. Let her be your master's son's wife, as the Lord has spoken. And it came to pass when Abraham's servant heard their words that he worshipped the Lord, bowing himself to the earth. Okay, first of all, notice some of the who's here. Same ones as we see now that Laban and Bethuel. Now, who's Bethuel?
Rebekah's father.
Rebekah's father. This is his first appearance, except by name, where he's actually speaking. It says, Laban and Bethuel answered. When we think of such things, when I called and asked permission to marry Barb, I didn't call her brother. I called her home. Her mom got on the phone, and I greeted her and said a couple of nice words and said, you know, is Mr. Burney home? And yes, well, I said, I'd like to talk to him, but you might want to stay on the line. And so he could just, well, she kind of knew where this was going. So, but all that to say, I didn't ask to talk to the brother. But Bethuel is alive because he speaks. Why isn't he, again, we're asking in the interpretive, why is that? Why is that? Why is that? Why does the brother do most of the talking? Any thoughts?
I think sometimes he might be running because of Bethuel's age. He might be running the affairs of what's need to be done. So as part of that, this might be just a natural act because he takes care of other parts of whatever needs to be done on the farm.
Okay, so that's an interesting concept here. So it may be because Bethuel is aged, the natural thing is the son becomes kind of the power of attorney. You know, he kind of really is maybe not entitled, but in actuality, the head of the home. And this happens in a lot of the kingships, even in Israel, after the David and the split time, that sometimes there will be a co-regency between where father and son are kind of co-reigning. And especially in the case where you've seen that, haven't you, with maybe a family where the parent is getting older, especially the oldest son or maybe the closest son tends to run the show. And it's a natural and respectful transition. So that may very well be. Could be a cultural thing, but that's actually, I think, the best. That makes the most sense. It may reflect his age. So he's still to be respected, but he leaves a lot of the details of business to Laban. So, but we know just in passing, notice that he's still there, still alive. Notice what is their response to how, you know, he's presented his narrative. How do they respond? What do you say, Kelly?
It's from the Lord.
It's from the Lord. Let me notice, observe. What about the Lord? What do you notice there?
It comes from the Lord.
Yeah, but the spelling?
Oh, Yahweh.
Okay, this is his name. So in other words, they're not just calling him some master god, because they would use, it's different, but the name Baal is actually could be translated Lord or master also. But this is Yahweh. This is Jehovah. This is his personal name. Now, the slave has been using that name. And the name is still known within the family. But notice they give all the credit and speak only of Yahweh. So that's a thing to notice.
The phrase coming after that, would that speak to the fact that if this comes from the Lord, it's not ours to judge whether it's good or bad, if it's from the Lord?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of expressing it. In other words, it's the Lord. What I think doesn't really matter. You know, for example, that's often true, for example, in the military. If the commander says, we're going to dig a ditch here, now I think we'll do better on the other side of the river, but what I think is actually irrelevant. Dig a ditch here, but his thing is, if it's the Lord. We have, in a sense, there's nothing else to say. So that's pretty, in one sense, they're bowing before the Lord, I think. That's how I would take it. And so there's a, so again, partly that helps explain the narrative, right? Look, here's the, I made a solemn vow. She cannot marry Canaanite. I had to come here. Look how the Lord orchestrated everything. He brought me to this place. He's blessed my master. He's brought me to this place. Of all, who was the first one on the scene? Who is the one that says exactly an answer to prayer? The Lord, the Lord, the Lord. And they, and so they get the point. It's the Lord. We can't, who are we to argue with the Lord? And so the response is, here's Rebekah before you, take her and go. Let her be your master's wife, master's son's wife, as the Lord has spoken. So what's their answer? What's their answer to the proposal? Yes. And again, because they see it's the Lord. Okay?
That verse is very interesting, very contrary to our culture. It's a patriarchal society. Nobody asks Rebekah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little later they did.
Well, on timing, I guess they'll come up. But yeah. Yeah, basically, though, they just said, yeah, yes, you may. And she's not, apparently, you get the impression, she's sitting quietly there, you know, and, or maybe she's in the other room, and then he says, "Here she is." But yeah, that's they're calling the shots. Which so in our day, it's more and more common where the kids will come and say, "Oh, guess what? We got married," or "Oh, look, we're engaged." Notice in this case, the father turns, or the brother turns to Rebekah and said, "You're engaged." And it came to pass when Abraham's servant heard their words that he worshipped the Lord, bowing himself to the earth. Notice again the worshipful response. How he prayed before he when he got to the well. How he bowed in worship when Rebekah came. He saw it was the Lord. He hears their response. He worships the Lord. Who's getting... Do you see that this guy truly is a believer? It's all about the Lord here. And what an example to us as we're working through life. Okay? Let's look at our next one here. So, then the servant brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, clothing, and gave them to Rebekah. So the other one was kind of, well, you're a nice girl, you've been kind to me, here's a very lavish gift. Now he's kind of like bringing bridal gifts. And again, I mentioned that back in those days, clothing was especially valuable. You know, it's all handmade. And you hand harvest, you hand make the thread, you hand weave it. And so fine clothing was extremely expensive. And the example I'll always give of that is when Achan went into Jericho and was forbidden to take things, one of the things he took was a garment because they were such a valuable commodity. So he brings clothing. He brings jewelry. He also gave precious things to her brother and her mother. Now, again, you notice the brother is kind of acting as the head of the home. Dad doesn't want that stuff. Just put me in front of the TV and I'll be satisfied. Brother and mother. And then the men who were with him ate and drank and stayed all night. And then they arose in the morning and said, "Send me away to my master." And so they had now they had a feast. But her brother and her mother said, "Let the young woman stay with us a few days, at least 10. After that, she may go." And he said to them, "Do not hinder me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away so I may go to my master." And so they said, "We will call the young woman and ask her personally." Then they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" And she said, "I will go." Okay, give me some observations as you're noticing that passage. What are some things that maybe stand out or questions that you have?
What if she had said no? He'd have to take back his word. He'd almost given his word.
The brother?
Yeah, and the father too. So what happened if she had said... Maybe it would not have happened because it's off the Lord, but I was just thinking that's what struck me.
Yeah. It does seem that she has a say in the matter. In some cases, you don't, but they don't. You know, in some cultures, it seems like she has some kind of veto power. Though, I mean, they don't even ask her until it's an issue of timing. But maybe that's part of the negotiating. We want to leave now, and maybe he was all along saying, "Well, we'll see how this turns out. We'll talk to Rebecca." I remind you, Laban is the one with Jacob. He strings him along for years, 14 years, and then makes it hard for them to leave. So, as a matter of fact, I've got to check, I've got to chase this down yet, but this few days, at least 10, some commentators say that's a phrase that means up to a year. So here's Laban trying to string her along, string him along, the servant. Help me out. I don't know why would he want to do that. What would be to his benefit?
More gifts along the way.
Yeah, more gifts. Sweeten the deal. If you still got something in your camel pack, then you know, shell it out. Otherwise, we're gonna. He did that with Jacob. You know, stick around.
This is all sudden too. You know, they might have had some things that she must have had duties, and they needed to make arrangements. And
yeah,
it could be. Because everybody, I'm sure, had their own chores and things.
You get the impression she's an honorable and industrious woman. She's going to be missed. You're right. Most of our companies, we expect a couple of weeks of notice, right, when someone leaves. Well, she wants her termination with full benefits with a day, his notice. Yeah.
Without reading too much into that passage, because this is just for conversation, mm-hmm. right? Could it have been that they were just asking her not so much permission whether she wants to truly go or whether she wanted to go right then rather than stay a little longer? And then was that the context?
So it's the question to her, really, do you want to go with him in marriage or are you ready to go now?
Right.
The context seems to put the focus on, are you ready to go now? Because again, that would be, a lot of us don't make quick decisions like that.
Because I can't see a situation where she might be able to override her father's word. You know, because he's already given his word, allowing him to take Rebecca with him. So that would put them in a really bad situation. The word was...
So that's, you know, it seems he said, yes, you can marry her.
Yeah.
He didn't say, if she says so. That the making it the time issue, the question, might explain that part.
And earlier, she's the one who had ran to her household and reported all these things that had happened. Mm-hmm. And she may have had a high degree of excitement, you know, when she went to tell. And so they may have already seen she's all happy about this.
Good point. So, you know, and that could have been partly part of it. Dad, this fellow's coming, and he's made it clear. He's looking for a wife for his master's son. And she may have said, I've never seen prettier camels. Say yes. In other words, so she could probably give some high signals. This is exciting, or it could have been, oh, whatever you do, send them out the back, you know. So, yeah, so she may have already had a chance to show she's interested. And that would make it easier to say, yes, she'll go. And then when he asks her, will you go? That does fit the context of, are you really ready to go this morning? You know, are you ready to pack up? You know, I mean, you're going to say goodbye to your mom and never see her again. And I'm reminded of the letter, I think I've read it to you, maybe I'll read it on Sunday morning again, but Adoniram Judson wrote a letter to his, was it Anne, his wife-to-be, or maybe, I can't remember now if they were married, but he wrote to her parents and said, you know, I'm going, I think it was to Burma at the time, I'm going to go to a far land. Are you ready to send your daughter where she will go through deprivation and illness and hardship unlike her life here? Are you ready to send her off to a foreign country and never see her again? Now, they were believers. He was a believer. She was a believer. But he was saying, do you understand what you're saying when you give your daughter to me to go into missions?
They weren't married. That was just his.
That was the proposal. Mm-hmm. That's how I can't remember now, but I think that's right. And so, understand. Count the cost. And that was hard. And in this case as well, count the cost. You may never see her again.
Pastor, I have a question. To back it up,
mm-hmm.
when the camels arrived, mm-hmm. the troop arrived, other than their word saying that, you know, they were sent by Abraham and stuff, what was the trust there that these people believed what they were saying? Like,
I think the clue, for example, would be, imagine putting in kind of our context. This is, and I get Laban probably was a man of some means as well. So imagine putting in ours, he's living in a very nice neighborhood, very large estate. A helicopter lands, and a fella steps out, lavishly dressed, and it's, you know, and he says, I'm coming to represent my employer. You know, the gifts that they've displayed, probably even his clothing, but the caravan of camels, those were expensive beasts and unusual. So all of that said, this man could not come if he did not represent, if he were not trusted, and if his master were not a man of wealth. So, and you know, the fact that he knew names and he mentioned Abraham and all of that fit, because they knew about Abraham leaving. And so they say, well, we'll ask her directly. And she answers very, very simply, I'll go. She does. Here's a picture of the giving of the gifts. This is probably maybe what it looked like, okay? It's one artist's rendition.
Drake, don't you think part of it, too, was just that the Lord worked in her heart to want to go?
The Lord was working in her heart, making her willing, I think. Now, here's another picture, more in color, of the giving of gifts. So they sent Rebecca away, their sister, and her nurse. So they sent her along with one of the servants, well, probably with others, and Abraham's servant and his men. They blessed Rebecca and said to her, our sister, may you become the mother of thousands of ten thousands. May your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them. And then Rebecca and her maids, so they sent her with some servants, arose, they rode on the camels and followed the man, and the servant took Rebecca and departed. Anything jump out there? But that phrase might jump out at you. We've seen it before. That was one of the covenantal blessings pronounced on Abraham, and here it's being pronounced on Rebecca. To possess the gates of your enemies. The gate is their the capital. In other words, may you conquer and control. May you not be in fear of them. May you conquer them. So they sent her out with their blessing. We won't get into the whole Isaac connection until Sunday, just to kind of keep it concise here. So, let's consider the lessons we can maybe glean from this section here.
Is that Isaiah up there?
I think so. And he's showing us all the schooling he's done. So, just some lessons that we can maybe draw from it. Maybe you can add to my list. But the first thing here, God is sovereign, right? And he rules through providence. We talked about the difference of miracles and providence. God's sovereignty is all over this thing. It's just like in the book of Ruth, and I think there's some parallels there, where it just so happens Ruth goes to the field of Boaz. God's sovereignty is just wonderfully here. There's the example of the servant. A godly man is a man of prayer. He prays for God's guidance. He recognizes, he worships. He is quick to worship when he sees God's hand. And that's a rebuke. We're quick to pray when we need something. We're slow to worship when God's hand is busy. And, how often do we just thank the Lord? It doesn't have to be. Notice, you know, he bowed his head and he thanked. But, you know, it was rather quick, I'm sure. The marriage of Isaac and Rebekah is from the Lord. Anyone doubt that that's what we're being told in this chapter? This is God's appointed marriage. And that reminds us, marriage in general is from the Lord. God is sovereign. We look for him to accomplish it. And the Lord is faithful to his promises and his covenant. You know, God told him, I'm going to give you descendants. Isaac needs a wife to have descendants. And again, marriage is being honored in this whole context. The way we have descendants and heirs and a legacy is through family. Go back to the original audience. The Israelites, the Jews, have left Egypt. They're on their way to the land. They're learning from example. Don't marry a Canaanite. They're wicked and they're cursed.
You forgot a verb up there.
Yeah, you forgot the word marry.
They must not Canaanites. Mm-hmm. I left that out just to see if anyone would pay attention. Good observation. And so from that, Israel can trust God's providence to give them godly wives. You know, they're going in the land and say, well, wait a minute, how are we going to have wives? Trust the Lord. Do it his way. But don't marry the Canaanites. But as they're going, reminding God's standards, but also God's sovereignty, he will accomplish and enable us to be faithful. Now, you might have some others to add to that. That's a starting place.
I think there's something to be said about the response, too, because it takes a great act of faith, you know, for even from Rebecca's perspective, mm-hmm. to just go. You know some from the stories, you haven't met mm-hmm. anyone that you're actually going to be with, either the groom or the family, truly. I know this is of the Lord, so I'm going to step out in faith and go. And today we walk even at arranged marriages as if it's an alien concept, you know. And this is like arranged marriage on steroids.
Yeah. It really is, because usually, I mean, you have some sense of who that family is and all this. They're another part of the world, yeah. This is an arranged marriage on steroids. But I think that's the key. All of that emphasis in telling us the story through a couple of times. God is in it. God is in it. So how the man and woman of faith is sensitive to see God's hand, and then to try. I think you're right.
Well, it takes a lot of courage to also be able to step out, you know, and say, yes, I'm going to trust and obey.
Yeah. It takes incredible courage, especially when there's so many unknowns. But it's always unknown, isn't it? The future is always an unknown. It takes great courage to trust the Lord. And so one of the keys we want to say is this seem right? Now, that doesn't mean we're going to get a billboard. This is the exactly right path. But we could examine the scripture, and we see his hand. We test wisdom. And she's convinced it's the Lord. And so she goes. and they're convinced it's the Lord, and they're not going to argue. You don't mess with the Lord. Though, I think that we're not going to say good or bad. If we really had a heart for the Lord, wouldn't we say, so that's good? You know, so you get their impression is, I can't argue with God.
I think the challenge we face today is all the noise around us that starts or allows us to question ourselves, you know. When drowning out the noise, I think is what we need.
Hmm.
That in the quiet, just trust God.
Very true. There's so much noise, interference, sounds. it's hard to follow the Lord. You know, have you ever driven next to someone who's distracted by their device? Have you ever noticed that they're having a hard time following the path? And that's kind of how we live. If we're just so distracted, we're kind of bouncing maybe between the lanes or hitting the curbs. And so it's just to have a focused attention. And this servant, he's single-minded, isn't he?
Right.
I'm going, I'm following, I'm at the well, I'm praying. She's doing those things. He is studying her. Goes to the family. I want to go home. He is focused and undistracted.
But look at his loyalty, too.
He's a hero.
He's not doing it for himself. He's doing it for somebody else. But he's paying attention to all the details, and he's doing it right by the book.
And with all that stuff, he could have just moved on. Settled.
Are you kidding? You know,
just her and
there is many of
her.
There is many a man that would have said, here's my chance, he'll never find me. 10 caravans loaded with wealth, I could reestablish. Notice they never call him in this chapter by name. Now some say this is the Eliezer of Genesis 15. But he's never named here. He's called the man or the servant. And it kind of like reminds us of John the Baptist. He must increase, I must decrease. If Jesus is getting more attention than I am, then I'm successful. And a servant, a real servant, is, as long as the Lord gets the glory, it doesn't matter if anyone knows about me. They say one of the tests of a servant is how you respond if people treat you like a servant. He was proud to be a servant of his master and the Lord. And it is a tremendous statement to his character. So I think there's some real models here, and that's why I think about narratives, is we can look at lives and say, you don't want to be like this one. And look at we've already got some hints about Laban. We'll see him later. Rebecca, she stands out. The servant. It's going to be fun to meet him in heaven and find out some of those things. He's a great man of God, but so, you know what? Some of the greatest men and women of God, we don't have a clue of their name. Now, we can think of the great men and women of God who are all over the internet, radio, and all that.
But then he keeps saying, this is from the Lord, you know. And so I don't know if he had the fear of God in his heart, you know.
I think he is. That's why he worships when he sees God's doing it. He just bows. That's the, you know, the fear of the Lord there is that he sees the Lord at work and he just has to pray. So this is wonderful. Well, good. That's some good thoughts. Keep studying. We didn't even talk to the big part where Isaac gets to meet his wife. That's kind of an important thing. But we will look at that on Sunday.